welcome to the Healthy Lifestyle Show with Dr. Dio Lanier. It's Wednesday, July 1st, and I'm your host, Dr. Lanier. We air the show every other Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can listen in live or you can tune in whenever it's convenient for you because all the shows are archived on our Blog Talk Radio page. For more information on me and the services I offer, please go to my website, which is www.drdiolanier.com and spelled out, that's www.drdiolanier.com. Welcome to the show. We are doing a in the news, hot off the press. We have a report that's entitled F as in Fat. And the report was actually released today, July 1st, by the Trust for America's Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that basically points to how obesity policies are failing in America in 2009. So the report basically told us right in their first line of the report is that obesity epidemic is increasing. And they also mentioned that, unfortunately, Mississippi weighs in as the heaviest state once again. So they're looking primarily at obesity rates in adults in this report. And they noted that they actually increased in 32 states, and they did not decrease in one single state in this past year, which I'm sure is very discouraging because we've been trying to, put forth policies and make changes in order to get a hold on this obesity epidemic, but this was not promising information coming from this report, especially as it relates to adult obesity. In addition to that, the percentage of children who are obese or overweight is 30% or higher in 30 of our states. So going back to Mississippi, as I mentioned, it had the highest rate of adult obesity at 32.5%, and this is actually the fifth year in a row that Mississippi has topped the list. Four states now have adult obesity rates above 30%, and that includes Mississippi as well as West Virginia, which is at 31.2%, Alabama at 31.1%, and Tennessee at 30.2%. And when they looked at it, adult obesity rates are now exceeding 25% in 31 of our states. And so that's really a problem. Once again, Colorado remains the only state where fewer than 20% of adults are obese. So a special shout out to Colorado, doing a little bit better than the rest of us. And so the F as in fat, report contains rankings of state obesity rates, and they also give a review of federal and state government policies that are aimed at preventing or reducing obesity in general. Now, the report offers recommendations for addressing obesity as a part of health reform, and some of the recommendations that they included are as follows. The first, ensuring every adult and child has access to coverage for preventative medical services, which include including nutrition and obesity counseling and screening for obesity-related diseases such as type 2 diabetes. And I think that is a very important recommendation because part of the problem when you're looking at obesity, whether it's in a child or an adult, is trying to get help for that. And a lot of times when you go into the doctor to kind of get recommendations on what you should be doing, one of the things that would be most beneficial is to receive nutrition information as well as they mention obesity counseling, but that's like things that give you behavior modification or behavior change techniques that you can use by yourself or with your family. And a lot of times those services are not covered, or they're only covered if you have certain health conditions like diabetes. And so that's a problem that we often run into in the healthcare sector, and it would be wonderful if those could be covered so people could have a better idea on what they can be doing to combat obesity. The second part of that was screening for obesity-related diseases such as type 2 diabetes. That's also something that's important. a lot of times you may see what's almost called a precursor, a warning sign at least, called acanthosis nigricans, which is that dark sort of thickened area that you can see in certain areas, especially people who are overweight. You can see it on the back of the neck or even the front sometimes, and then certain areas like under the arm or in the groin area. And that just kind of alerts that maybe we should be on the lookout and check you out to make sure that your blood sugar is okay and other things as well. So checking people for type 2 diabetes is really something that's important because the rate of that goes up if you are obese, as does things like high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and I think those should be screened for as well. One of the other recommendations they give is increasing the number of programs available in communities, schools, and child care settings that help to make nutritious foods more affordable and accessible, and also to provide safe places for people to engage in physical activity. That's to kind of talk a little more about the first part of that recommendation. It's really important to have programs that get to people where they are. And so people are living in homes and they're living in the communities. If you're talking about children, they spend the majority of it, well, it's summer now, but when school's in session, they spend the majority of their time in school. And if they're younger than elementary age, they're going to be in child care settings if they're not in the home already. So they're going to get a lot of times they may get breakfast at school and as well as lunch and perhaps some snacks depending on how old the children are. And so it's important to make sure that those snacks are accessible to them, a healthy snack and nutritious foods in general. And also that they're affordable. If you're talking about schools and childcare settings, you don't want for them to have to choose something that may not be as nutritious just because it's more cost effective for the school or the childcare setting. You want for them to be able to afford nutritious foods, same things in the community. You want to be able to go to get healthy food from some place. And I did mention a study that looked at the fact that in poor neighborhoods, they're more likely to have more fast food restaurants and fewer supermarkets, and that in wealthier neighborhoods are have three times the number of supermarkets than in poorer neighborhoods. So that's a problem, and it's a disparity that definitely would need to be addressed, and it's really important to make that food accessible as well as affordable, because if you can get access to it, but it's more than that than you can take in because of your budget, that's a problem as well. So I think that's important. The second part of that recommendation was providing safe places for people to engage in physical activity. If you do not feel safe in your environment, you're not going to get outside and walk or play if you're a child, if you're concerned about your safety. That's whether that's in your neighborhood or whether it's in a neighborhood park or community center, you want to make sure that you feel safe. That's one of the things that is most important, and that you feel good enough about the environment that you're in that you can be physically active for people of all ages, ranging from children to adults to seniors. So that's something that's very important. Another key recommendation that they gave was reducing Medicare expenditures by promoting proven programs that improve nutrition and physical activity among adults ages 55 to 64. So this is I won't say elderly. I think my mom would probably get on me if I mentioned elderly in this group. So definitely not, and I'll be close to that group before you know it. But that's older adults. And so the obesity is still a problem, and so you want to make sure that if there are programs that are working in terms of improving nutrition and making this age group more physically active or increasing their physical activity, that you go ahead and use those programs or promote them, especially if they're proven to be effective. This report also called for a national strategy to combat obesity. And what that strategy would do would be to pinpoint roles and responsibilities for different levels of the government, so federal, state, and local governments, as well as to promote collaboration among businesses, communities, schools and families. And I think that is definitely the way to go. None of us exist in a vacuum. We are moving about in our communities, and we can't always rely on the federal, state, and local governments to not only come up with these policies and to implement them. There are certain things that we should be able to do as communities and as business owners, as well as schools. And there have been many things in my area that have made good use of this collaboration. Certain things like, you know, if they're having a healthy food night at a restaurant, or one of the community businesses sponsoring a, you know, 1 mile walk run or bike ride or something like that. So there are many ways that we can collaborate all of the different groups together in order to combat obesity in general. This national strategy to combat obesity that they are talking about would also want to advance policies that do a number of things. The first would be to provide healthy foods and beverages to students at schools. And you know, I mentioned younger kids like elementary school, but once you start getting older into middle school and high school, not only the food that's available in the cafeteria, but also the vending machines. You want to make sure that you have healthy options and not just sodas or things that are high in calories but low in nutrients. Another thing would be to increase the availability of affordable healthy foods in all the communities, to increase the frequency, intensity, and duration of physical activity at school. Now, I think that is actually great that they mention each of those things. They mention frequency, which is how often, the intensity, which is the level of the physical activity, and usually when we're talking about people in general, children and adults, you want to see a moderate to vigorous intensity of physical activity. And then they also mentioned duration. So you don't want to just kind of get out there for 5 minute, you know, 10 minute recess. You'd like for that to be longer period of time for physical activity. And we usually recommend as a pediatrician or people who deal with children that they should be getting at least an hour of physical activity per day. And because they're in school for most of the time while school is in session, that's a great place for them to be able to get that in. Unfortunately, there's been a problem with not only having the physical education classes in, you know, what I used to have when I was back in school, but also for recess for younger children because they're trying to meet the guidelines with the No Child Left Behind, and so they cut out some things in order to put more of an emphasis on reading and math. So, you know, as you see this physical activity or physical education and recess levels or amounts go down, you start to see the childhood obesity rates go up. So I think we need to pay attention to that. Another thing that they point out is improve access to safe and healthy places to live, work, learn, and play. Another is limiting screen time. That's a big one, and I think that includes all of the different ways that you can be looking at a screen. So whether it's on the computer, surfing the net, updating your Facebook profile, which I'm guilty of, but for children, video games, and some adults actually, adults play video games as well. So the amount of time that you're doing, whether it's the game on a big TV or a handheld device, if you're using your phone and you're looking at that screen texting 24/7, that's another form of screen time. And so we should be limiting that, all of us should be. But for children, there's actually a recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatrics that children under 2 should not really have any screen time and should rely more on face-to-face contact, which I know the moms are like, what? You know, I have to admit, my children when they were under 2 did have a little bit of screen time, and I tried to make it educational and not that often. But that's the new newer recommendation. And then for children 2 years old and above, that they have no more than 2 hours of screen time per day, and that includes all of the different types of screen time in that 2 hours or less. And one of the other last things that is on the report is encouraging employers to provide workplace wellness programs. I think that is a great way to go, because just like children are in school for most of the day, most adults are at work. And if you are not self-employed, you most likely have an employer. And so having a workplace wellness program goes a long way towards encouraging in some way or another wellness and nutrition and fitness. That I think is a wonderful thing. So this is the F as in Fat, How Obesity Policies Are Failing in America, a report put out once again by the Trust for America's Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And you can find out more information on that report on their website, which is www.rwjf.org, and that's the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation website for that. So in case you are just joining me, you're listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Show with Dr. Dio Lanier. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're talking about things that are going on in the news, and we just mentioned the obesity epidemic report that shows that it's increasing. There's also another interesting thing that I found from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that talked about menu labeling. And the question in this article was, does providing nutrition information at the point of purchase affect consumer behavior? That was a question that they were looking at. And they looked at all of the latest data or information on the impact of menu labeling. So why are they even looking at this? Because Americans spend nearly half of their food budgets either eating out or purchasing food that's prepared away from the home, and also because the majority of restaurants don't really provide that nutrition information at the point of purchase, which if you're talking about a restaurant, that the point of purchase would be on the menu. Many public health advocates and policymakers are really looking for menu labeling as a way to address the nation's obesity epidemic. Now, I just talked about a report that showed that the epidemic of obesity is increasing rather than decreasing, which is discouraging to hear. So they're looking at all kind of ways to try to combat this obesity epidemic, and menu labeling is one of the things that they were trying to solve the problem. So there has been momentum growing in states and in other agencies to try to implement menu labeling policies, and Congress also considers this strategy as part of a health reform, which I think is pretty good. I think it'd be helpful. So this new research that they put together from all of this different data was by Healthy Eating Research. And that provided the latest information on the use of menu labeling in food establishments like restaurants and cafeterias, as well as that impact on labeling on what consumers eat and what they drink in those food and beverage selections. So their key findings from this report were that most consumers would like to see nutrition information in the places where they go out to eat. And I am one of those people. I really, you know, when you go out to eat, you think, oh, it's if you're going out for a gathering or just a special occasion, you know, it's fun. But I think that it would be very helpful to have an idea how many calories you're taking in when you're there. That might change what I order. I think I've mentioned I have a bit of a sweet tooth, and I do like Snickers. But sometimes I'll turn that bar over, and I know exactly that it's 280 calories in the bar, and I'll have to judge, like, wow, is it a 200-calorie extra empty calorie day or not? You know, am I going to be working out to burn that off? And so it helps you make better decisions. And when you don't have that information available, it makes it hard, or you just may overlook exactly how many calories you're taking in. So most consumers want to see that information, and I'm definitely one of them. Another finding was that the number of U.S. restaurants that provide nutrition information to consumers has increased over the past decade, which is great. However, the majority of restaurants don't provide consumers with this information at the point of purchase, which, for example, would be on the menu. a lot of times they have that information available. For example, you walk into your neighborhood of fast food restaurant about to chow down on a burger and fries, and the next time you do that, why don't you just inquire about the nutrition information sheet? They have it. And, you know, I actually asked, and they kind of dig under the counter, and, you know, they're fishing through, and they find it, and they give it to you as if it's like a covert operation, but they'll hand it to you, and they have it available if you ask, but it's not right there. And what you will find is shocking. You can look and find out, wow, this meal that I was going to get is 1,000 calories, and that's like, you know, half the calories I need for the day, depending on the person. There's a 780 calories in this one burger. And so it's important to make use of that. They have it available in the different establishments like that. And so just ask them about it, whether it's a fast food restaurant or even if you're going to a coffee place where, you know, they have the super large coffees. It's great to know exactly how many calories are in the venti or whatever coffee you may be getting. So ask for those because they have them available, even though it'd be great to see it a little bit more present. Also, most consumers underestimate the number of calories and fat in away-from-home foods, and they tend to make greater errors when the menu items are higher in calories. Or if they're, for example, ordering from places that promote themselves and their menu is healthy, that may throw some people off. So that it's helpful. You may think, oh, this has this many calories, maybe that much fat. And a lot of time it has even more than you're thinking. So that's important. And then another and the last point on this report is that the findings include requiring restaurants to provide point-of-purchase nutrition information could help reduce obesity by promoting the introduction of healthier menu items. So if you would be shocked and appalled to put the fact that this burger is like 780 calories on your menu, then maybe that might prompt you to have healthier options that you might be proud to say, oh, this is only 200 calories or 300 calories. And if you're breaking down the fat amount too, that might be important to consider. And so I think that is a good point as it relates to menu labeling. Once again, this is also from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. They really do put out a lot of great information on obesity for adults and children. And once again, the website to the foundation is www.rwjf.org. I also have something for you. I mentioned that it was July 1st at the top of the show, which means that the 4th of July is just a few days away this Saturday, Independence Day. And so what we tend to have, or it just goes with cookouts and fireworks are a part of that, but they're actually from the AAP, which is the American Academy of Pediatrics. They actually have some information where they are urging families not to buy fireworks. Why is the American Academy of Pediatrics doing that? Fireworks come with the 4th of July. Why? Well, they're urging families not to buy the fireworks because each year about 10,000 people are treated in emergency departments for injuries from consumer fireworks. And so the AAP, or the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the National Fire Protection Association, which is the NFPA, as well as the Alliance to Stop Consumer Fireworks, have all urged families not to buy fireworks for their own or their children's use. So even those sparklers, which are those little, you know, they're like the little gray sort of things with the little metal stick that you hold onto, and you light them, and they're supposed to be wee, and you whip them around, and they're sparkly, that a lot of people give to their children, even those can become extremely hot and burn children. And if children are holding in the wrong area, like high up on that little metal handle part, or even on the part that actually burns down, they can very easily burn themselves. And I actually have burned myself when I was a child on those. So even that is a possibility, not to mention things that you know, kind of explode like firecrackers to a certain degree. So they actually have put out a series of video public service announcements that are available through the NFPA, which is the National Fire Protection Association. And the American Academy of Pediatrics also has a Minute for Kids radio spot about the dangers of fireworks that you can check out on the American Academy of Pediatrics website, which is www.aap.org, and can give you more information about that. And I don't think that they're urging families not to buy fireworks just to kind of put a damper on your parade or your 4th of July. But just for that sheer number of people who are treated in emergency room from injuries that result from those big-time fireworks, you know, are something, you know, speaks to something. And so, you know, there are a lot of places that have firework displays, or you may even have that going on in your neighborhood. So, you know, why not go let someone else do the work and enjoy it and not have to worry about having any problems or injuries as a result of, you know, fireworks, consumer fireworks. So that is today's episode of In the News. I hope you heard some information that will be helpful to you in your life, especially that menu labeling. Remember to go in and ask for that menu just so you can have a better idea of what you're eating. I think that's a good idea. And also, I just want to remind you that the information presented in this program is for education and motivation purposes only. Please consult your personal physician or other healthcare professional before starting, changing, or discontinuing any treatment. I want to thank you again for joining me today. Please be sure to tune in next time, which will be Wednesday, July 15th, when we'll be talking about more health and wellness in the news. So I look forward to speaking with you then, Wednesday, July 15th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And until then, remember to be healthy and God bless. Take care.